Hello, and welcome to the Architects of Destination Advocacy podcast from Destinations International, the trade association representing destination organizations around the globe, brought to you exclusively by Relic Agency as part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. I'm your host, Andreas Weisenborn, and welcome you for checking out our podcast. For each episode, we want to tell the story of both usual and unusual suspects in our sector's history and the key advocacy moments for them. These stories are meant to tell the tale in full, covering many of our strategic issues and opportunities our sector faces, whether it be community alignment, destination stewardship, resilience, or actions based on values. We hope you listen in and learn from your peers. With that, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the last episode of the podcast for 2023 for us here. Before we get started, I want to actually take a small moment to actually acknowledge this episode of the Architects of Destination Advocacy for the Advocacy Committee of 2023, as you'll hear from our guest shortly. But I did want to do a small announcement that all the 2024 event schedule for Destinations International is out and on our website. We have our first event coming up right away in the end of winter, beginning of spring. So please check a look at our website at destinationsinternational.org for the latest events and hope to see you there. So today's podcast episode and guest is our final for 2023 and really is a reflection of our Advocacy Committee for Destinations International. Destinations International really is a tapestry of volunteer committees and task forces who help guide and initiate much of the output and direction the association takes year over year. Committee members constitute a myriad of different organizations across the members of Destinations International and volunteer their time in a number of different ways. For the Advocacy Committee, we are comprised of over 65 individuals across destinations and suppliers who meet every 2 weeks to discuss the latest issues or opportunities we might have in our sector. We are definitely a lively bunch, and you'll hear that in the conversation today, as each conversation is really intended for everyone to share their opinion and also collaborate on ideas amongst ourselves. In the past year, we have looked at being under attack for woke topics and ESG, over-tourism, TikTok bans, short-term rentals, and more. Today, I'm happy to bring on our two co-chairs of the 2023 Advocacy Committee to hear their thoughts on the past year and dissect a bit of their favorite moments and topics that we've covered. Please welcome to the show, Kurt Kraus of Visit Norfolk, and Gary Sanchez of Visit Dell. Kurt, Gary, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Andreas. Hello, Gary.
Thank you, sir. Hey, Kurt. It's good to see you. It's good to see you too, Andreas.
So to get stuff started here in the holiday spirit, I wanted to ask if both of you wouldn't mind giving just a tiny bit of background introduction to yourself, to the sector, and your current roles in your organization. So Kurt, if you can go first.
Sure. Current role is President CEO of Visit Norfolk. That's the Convention and Visitors Bureau, the destination marketing organization for Norfolk, the city of Norfolk in Virginia. And we are on the Atlantic, almost the Atlantic coast, surrounded by water, and delighted to be with the show. I have been in the industry way too long. I'm waiting to retire as soon as Andreas offers me a job, then I can move on. Or Gary. No, it's too hot. No, I'm too hot and too cold in Dallas. But I truly enjoy what I do with the destination management role. Like I said, I've been in the hotel business for 35 years, mostly with Marriott Hotels, primarily in the convention hotel space.
Okay. Gary?
Awesome. Howdy. Gary Sanchez, Senior Director of Community Impact, Equity, and Public Affairs at Visit Dallas. I know that's a long title, but it's evolved. I started off doing solely public affairs here in 2017, and then it's evolved into doing a little bit more DEI work and community engagement. And so, I joined Visit Dallas in 2017, specifically to help our CEO fight back some pretty nasty legislation that was coming our way in the form of bathroom bills. And we were successful in beating that back. And we've been back at the state legislature to advocate for good bills and try to defeat bad bills. And, being smack in the middle of the country, we do have, to Kurt's point, we do have some heat waves that we'll be talking about later and how that affects travel and tourism. But for the most part, Dallas is a great city. We love showing off the city, either for leisure travelers or for meetings, conventions, and large sporting events. But it's been a pleasure serving as co-chair with Mr. Kirk Kraus, and definitely with the support and the help from Andreas and your team.
Well, thank you so much, and let's get into it. So what we're going to do today, first question actually for both of you, and Kurt, since you are the outgoing chair, I'll let you answer first. But As listeners heard, neither one of you have advocacy in your title, yet we are here today as both of you as the co-chairs of the committee. I wanted to hear, what are your thoughts on the responsibility of advocacy now being part of every staffer's role responsibility in a destination organization? So, Kurt, you can answer first.
Great. Thanks, Andreas. I think the question's a great one in that it reflects on the staffers, our the associates that we work with every day. But I would also offer that as president and CEO of any DMO, advocacy is a significant role that you have, whether it's in your title or not. You are dealing with many, many stakeholders. However, that being said, advocacy is clearly an important aspect of promoting our destinations, because it goes beyond the traditional marketing efforts. Advocacy involves supporting and championing the destination's interests and needs. It is ultimately the responsibility of all involved in our industry, especially our staff. And you can't forget our board of directors. Advocacy also helps to build trust and credibility among potential visitors. Think of our staff in our visitor center. As you come into that visitor center, you're greeted by one of our 35 staff members, or the mobile visitor center, which is in a van that travels to 100 different events around the Commonwealth of Virginia. They are the first ones that people typically see. So when a destination is seen as actively working to address social, economic, environmental issues, it can attract responsible and conscious travelers who value that sustainability or that authenticity. So it's really important that our staff get involved in that. It involves everyone to actively support and champion the destination's interests and working towards a sustainable and responsible tourism practices. Who better than our staff?
Yeah, absolutely. Gary?
Well, first and foremost, there's no way I can package up my answer to that question as well as Kurt has, but actually, Andreas, I will try. But Andreas, I want to thank you. You know, when I saw this, it kind of took me by surprise. I was like, wait a minute, you're right. Advocacy is not in either one of our titles, and yet that's what we do every day.
Yep.
And so I'm delighted that we're starting off a conversation with this topic. You know, to reiterate, you know, I came in 2017 to help fight back some pretty lassy legislation coming down at the state in Austin. And, you know, that was my first time actively advocating for the destination, for the state, and to try to stop this bad legislation from happening. And so, you know, up until then, Visit Dallas, or the Dallas Convention and Visitors Bureau, hadn't engaged in the state legislature at all. The only time they'd ever done that was through the passing of the Tourism Public Improvement District, or the TPID. And that passed in 2011 and then went into effect 2012. And other than that, we stayed in our lane as a destination marketing organization until 2017. And ever since then, we've been very active at the state level, advocating for travel, tourism, incentives for major events, for film and the moving industry. But, you know, advocacy exists now for us at various levels. As we saw and experienced in 2019, we were tasked with renegotiating our contract with the city of Dallas, right? Mm. And so we needed to advocate at a very local level, hyper-local level. And we definitely engaged all of our board members and our community stakeholders. We went through various levels of city council meetings where we had folks come out and advocate and speak in our favor of why the city of Dallas should keep their contract with Visit Dallas. But it was really interesting, and I think I've shared this before with the advocacy committee, is that We were called out by the city council. It's like, hey, you do a great job of bringing in hotel owners and hotel general managers and airport executives and business leaders, but you really don't have the common, you know, the residents coming out and speaking in your favor. And so that was a rude awakening for us, right? And I'm thankful for it, because city council was right. You know, we do a great job of advocating for ourselves within our own bubble, but the residents of Dallas, the ones who give us the privilege to do our jobs, you know, they didn't have an idea who we were. So that shifted our focus and our strategy of how can we engage more at a local level. And we've been doing that ever since. And then as we saw in 2020, with COVID and the huge effect it had on the travel and tourism industry, we're now advocating at a national level through our national associations, U.S. Travel Association specifically, advocating for these stimulus packages and COVID relief packages, which we benefited from, thankfully. And so now it's sort of it's a three-level advocacy approach. And to Kurt's point, every single one of our employees is doing this daily, whether they're doing it with visitors, you know, who come through our mobile visitor center, or through our sales associates who are out there booking the business and may have concerns or questions on why their meeting should or should not be happening in Texas. Every single one of our employees is an advocate out there and doing a great job of marketing the city and also sharing the great value that we Visit Dallas bring to the city of Dallas.
Wonderful. I appreciate responses from both of you. So next set of questions. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Andreas, a question to Gary, and it's kind of an open one. I have found this committee to be extraordinarily helpful in understanding different points of view from all over the country, all different sizes of DMOs. I could not have learned this job any better, any faster, if it were not for this committee. So, you know, Gary, I don't know if since you've been on the committee, has it changed? Has it modified any of your ideas and thoughts? And have you gained support from outside of Dallas to gain thoughts and comments?
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, I
agree. I agree with you, Kurt. You know, that's one of the great things about serving on the advocacy committee. And it has a great, I think, an ideal cross-section of our industry. Both DMOs and non-DMOs of various sizes and other folks,
right.
other businesses that touch the travel and tourism industry. Serving on this committee has been a great experience of learning what may be happening similarly to other DMOs. And I think we know of a couple who have been in similar situations where the city was renegotiating or negotiating their contract and ended up not doing that, right? And so for me, it was very humbling for me to serve as a resource for my colleagues who were experiencing this in other parts of the country. And it had not been for serving on this committee, I'm not sure if I would have been able to do that.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. So let's get into the next set of questions. This really goes to the cadence of the advocacy committee. I know you two know as well, but for those uninitiated, every 2 weeks, a new topic. No topic too niche or too big or too small to tackle, and everyone speaks. That's kind of the rules of the road we set as part of it. What I want to do was pull apart from this past year some, I think, some of the more interesting ones, more the more impassioned ones, responses we got, and I'm going to go back and forth between Kurt and Gary for each one. So I'm going to start this off, and Gary, you already kind of laid a little bit of the foundation of your background, your work, and stuff that you've already been advocating for and dealing with in your destination. So early in the year, we put the question out to our committee about, has anyone been under attack or pushback for being perceived as too woke or too woke topics in conjunction with anti-ESG? And ESG, for those uninitiated, is environmental, social, or governance practices frequently found with financial or investment strategies. I know that question came up was actually, what simply is ESG? Unfortunately, Gary, I know you're very familiar with both in your destination and your role, but wanted to get your perspective on those topics in large in your role with Visit Dallas.
Yeah, well, thank you. No, absolutely. And thank you for the question and the conversation. And I think this is probably one that we could spend the entire podcast speaking about between the three of us. But for the interest of time, yeah, no, that this was one of my favorite happy hour conversations that we had. Not favorite because it's a great topic to address, but because I think a lot of us are experiencing this throughout the country. And as I stated on our original call, you know, I think as DMOs, you know, our very nature is to be hospitable, right? I mean, we're in the hospitality industry. We want to be welcoming to everybody. And so if one may peruse our website, they may see lots of content out there for all different sorts of cultures, whether it be African-American culture, Asian-American, Latino, LGBTQ+, you name it, right? It's out there. And so we are very fortunate in Dallas in that Dallas has just evolved to be a very inclusive and welcoming community. However, we exist in the state of Texas. And in the state of Texas, it's, you know, the optics are not as cheerful as we've experienced throughout the years, right? At least since I've been at Visit Dallas. And so, you know, it's unfortunate that the term woke has positive origins within the African-American community and has been politicized most recently, you know, with some of the national elections that have occurred. And it's unfortunate that that term, as well as ESG, has been politicized, because that's, unfortunately, everything's getting politicized these days, right? And along with ESG, there's also the topic of EDI or DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, right? But, you know, being in Texas, you know, we are definitely challenged with the optics of the state being welcoming and inclusive. But fortunately, we can demonstrate how inclusive Dallas is and doesn't only welcome diversity, but celebrates it, right? So we're very fortunate that through our local leaders, through the corporate community, as well as philanthropy. So along the lines of ESG, you know, environmental social governance, again, it is challenging being in the state of being in a red state and being a blue sea or a blue island in the Red Sea. But along with DEI, it's something that fortunately in Dallas we're insulated with, again, because we have such strong support from the local community. It's when we start looking out and looking at the state of Texas as a whole where we get a little bit of challenge. You know, people may not know, but this past legislative session, the state of Texas passed a law that basically dissolves any EDI or DEI offices at any colleges, public colleges or universities. And those public colleges and universities cannot offer any sort of DEI training or have any practices when it comes to onboarding new staff. And so we're obviously very concerned about this. As a DMO, we were concerned about the optics of the state and what that would do to specifically my role with the Vins of Dallas and then the DEI topic within the business community. But fortunately, unfortunately, that passed in the state of Texas, affecting public colleges and universities, but it really, I haven't seen the effect, at least not yet, in the corporate community within here, within Dallas, which is very fortunate. But to sum it up, you know, again, with the topic of anti-woke, ESG and EDI, we're very fortunate that in Dallas, we can definitely demonstrate that we are very welcoming, inclusive, and when people visit, we want them to have a good time, we want them to feel welcome, we want them to feel safe.
Appreciate the response, Gary. Kurt, next one on to you. So in the spring, we actually saw Skift sort of make an announcement about shifting away from the term over tourism. They were one of the first to coin that a little bit over a decade ago. We've long talked about, you know, is it really over tourism? Is it actually a failure in destination management? You know, so we don't want it to be outright negative. You gave a great impassioned response to this. And Kurt, just wanted to hear your perspective of it.
Oh, thank you very much. This is very near and dear to us here in Norfolk. Let me help by defining it, if I can. Overtourism refers to a situation, if you will, where the number of tourists visiting a destination exceeds the capacity, the carrying capacity of that destination, and it results in negative impacts potentially to the environment, to the local community, and the overall visitor experience. So if the infrastructure can't handle that, then people aren't going to be real happy, not even the visitors coming in eventually. For the city of Norfolk, this conversation is incredibly timely, not so much as whether the phrase should be overturned, but more importantly, understood well in advance of the visitor demand. And for us, it's a little easier because in 2025, our city will experience a significant increase in cruise ship activity with Carnival Cruise Lines scheduling weekly trips originating from the Elizabeth River that then goes through the Chesapeake Bay and then onward to the Atlantic and its final destinations or its rounds. Sounds exciting, combining the rich history of the region, our great culinary scene, the world's largest naval base, walkable city, with the adventure of a cruise. But that scenario comes with tremendous risk if it's not addressed. We will have a little bit less than a year now for our residents to be educated to the value of what 200,000 passengers are going to bring to our city in a year, just for the cruises. We can learn from other destinations on how best to overcome the negative sentiment, but we need to learn to develop a community-based model that engages our residents into the memorable outcome of the visitors. In essence, how do we inspire residents to be part of the collective tourism future? And it's a struggle. The strategy should attract stakeholders in creating a great value, activating places and spaces, supporting the community engagement. But without that, we could be down this rabbit hole of a disaster of, I can't get into restaurants, I can't find my parking space, traffic is a disaster, we've never had that before, and now all of a sudden we have this brewing of anti-tourism sentiments. So the aim, I think, is to balance between the tourism growth and the preservation of the destination's natural and cultural assets, ensuring a positive and sustainable experience for both visitors and residents. If we don't take the residents involved from the beginning, we are going to run into many, many problems. I believe we are. So how do we do that? And that's what we're planning on now. In fact, we started to meet with Carnival and our staff at the cruise lines to at least discuss how do we bring everybody together at the table. Then everybody's involved. Everybody's part of that phrase, if you will. Are preventing that phrase from happening. I don't think we ditch it. I think we use it as an advantage to educate.
Appreciate the response.
May I add to that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you. No, Kurt, it's such an interesting dynamic, right? Because, you know, one would be, oh my God, we're getting cruise ships. It's wonderful. It's wonderful for everybody. But what are the effects of that going to be long-term to the local residents, right? We're landlocked in Dallas, so we don't have cruise ships. But here in a few years, we're getting ready to host a pretty big global event called the FIFA World Cup. And so folks will definitely be affected by that for months. It's to be determined.
And years after.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so we may be feeling part of that for a brief period of time in 2026, 2025 into 2026. But, you know, I think you said it correctly, where we need to get residents involved and get them interested and invested in to understand the value of travel and tourism to the community.
So no disrespect at all to Charleston and our friends in Charleston, but they really wanted Carnival out. But yet, so how does Mobile succeed? How does Miami succeed? And yet Charleston wanted no part of the cruise business, or wanted no part of the Carnival cruise business anyways. Mm. So, you know, I think going to our friends, our colleagues that wanted it out and wanted to keep it is going to be very beneficial to us. And as well as with the World Cup, as well as a Super Bowl, as well as, you know, any Olympics. You know, LA is going to get the Olympics in 28. They've had them before, sort of. But so how did they deal with it?
Yep.
On to the next one. So in the beginning of August, I think many of you got the notices, as we've gotten every year, about this being either the hottest month or hottest summer on record. I thought that was interesting this past July, because obviously we had our annual convention in Dallas, which for many of us was the first time we experienced such heat like that. I know, Gary, it's, you know, something you'll talk about as part of it. We asked the question of the committee, you know, with records being broken, how has this either affected your organization, or how do you have concerns or other tourism-related matters affecting in the future as we are seemingly going to an ever-increasingly warmer temperatures in the summer. So, Gary, your perspective on that.
Yeah, no, thank you. And first and foremost, it was a pleasure hosting Destinations International Annual Conference here in Dallas in July. We had a great time. And as I mentioned before, Andreas, when it was over, I had withdrawal. I was like, where did all my friends go? but no, I understand completely that some folks were, some attendees, we're concerned about being in Texas in July because of the heat. But thankfully, we made it through. And but to the point of the question is, yes, it was one of the hottest summers in Texas history. And alongside with, you know, a couple of years ago, I think, unfortunately, Kurt, you were in town when we had the deep freeze of 2021, right? And so extreme weather patterns happening. So, you know, although the question is about the heat in Texas and record-breaking heat, the bigger conversation is, you know, what's happening at a global level, right, with climate change? And what is our role as a DMO, as a travel and tourism industry, to address climate change? Again, we're landlocked in Dallas, but, you know, we just have to go to Florida. And there was a report that the waters off of Key West were 100 degrees. Their temperature hit 100 degrees. What is that doing to coral reefs? What is that doing to marine life? and how is that affecting the travel and tourism industry? Several months ago, we learned about the devastation on Maui, right, with the fires, and what, you know, what role did travel and tourism play with either the amount of development on the island, and so on and so forth, and should travel and should tourists go back to the island to help bring them back up after the huge devastation, right? And then, you know, there's countless examples of, you know, the glaciers melting and the, you know, seawater rising. What is that going to do to your cruise ship industry in, you know, in Virginia, right? And so
they'll be docking at my house.
No, hopefully not. But again, I mean, and so I think I've shared this before with advocacy committee members, but my degree is in biology. So it's really interesting that I'm doing government affairs, public affairs, and EDI work now. But so my passion is biology and ecology. And so I have the pleasure of sharing those interests with a couple of other advocacy committee members. But I look out for these stories, right? Just because I care. But then also, you know, how is it affecting the travel and tourism industry? And what can we do to make things better for everyone, right? And so thankfully, there is now a sustainability task force within the advocacy committee, so we can address those topics there. But, you know, it's a cycle with every winter, you know, Texas is preparing for that big freeze, right? And how are we going to address it in case if it does happen? And then with every summer, how are we going to address the ongoing heat and drought? Thankfully, neither one of our airports has been affected by the heat or the drought, but, you know, some of our colleagues in other parts of the country have been, right? And so, I truly appreciate, Andreas, you bringing this topic to the podcast, and I'm thankful that the Advocacy Committee now has a sustainability task force where we can share ideas and learn from each other on best practices to address sustainability and stewardship.
Appreciate the response, Gary. Kurt, this next one's for you. So this past fall, World Tourism Day was celebrated with its theme around green investments, in particular the UNWTO SDGs. You gave a great impassioned part, maybe unintentionally, at the Advocacy Summit this past year in Little Rock, talking about your sort of unawareness of a lot of those SDGs and those work already being done, and how informative it was to you to actually gather all that. This is a good piggyback off what everything you just mentioned, Gary, about work and awareness in this space. But I actually thought we asked the question to the committee, what are your thoughts on this day and are you doing anything? But I actually wanted to flip it a bit and just ask Kurt your perspective of what you've kind of learned since that moment of that conversation and your own research into it now.
Thanks. No, it's, many of us in the industry know about National Tourism Week that we have in May and how we rally around that. I had no idea of World Tourism Day. And it's always on September 27th, which I didn't know until we started talking about this. And this particular past September, it was focused on green investments. And I assume that every year it's a different theme, but I don't know that because this has only been my first one. But it's a prime reminder for destination marketers, if you will, to align the strategy with something bigger. And Gary, you talked about it. How do we protect our planet? How do we make people aware of heat or the cold or the 100 degrees? If you're a diver and you're diving off the Florida coast or the Great Barrier Reef, we want to maintain those reefs. So we need to protect the planet. We need to protect our environment and the communities we live in. One of the numbers that really stood out to me from the Advocacy Summit, Andreas, was that 87% of travelers are focused on sustainability and want to do good in that community that they're visiting or they're traveling to. 87%. I mean, that's not just a little more than, that's a lot of people who are looking for that experience. How do we showcase our commitment to providing sustainable tourism and experiences? And if we don't start shifting into at least making aware of that as an organization, I think we're missing the point. With the right strategies, DMOs can not only attract travelers with similar values, they can also ensure that the destination can remain open and have a welcoming future. There are a number of wonderful examples, and one that comes immediately to mind, and we had the great fortune of being there for the CEO Summit this year, was in Victoria. And Destinations Greater Victoria is a biosphere, and help me if I'm wrong on this, Andreas, a biosphere destination, which is a guarantee of environmental, economic, and socioeconomic balance that meets the criteria for the modern traveler.
Yes.
I don't know how many have received it, but it is a significant, it's a UN, it's a world charter, it's a COP21 Paris Agreement, yet they have earned that certification. And what it does is it gives travelers peace of mind about the Greater Victoria Sustainability Commitment, but it also lists a variety of attractions, accommodations, and dining areas, transportation, on how they can make their stay better. So everybody has bought into this in Victoria. Discover Puerto Rico has ways that traveler can explore the island, from wellness retreats to what they call slow travel. I thought that was great. Asheville, here on the East Coast in North Carolina, is working on it at multiple levels to attract sustainable-minded travelers. I mean, I forget the numbers that we talked about in the advocacy committee meeting recently, but the dollars that those travelers spend are a market into itself. And if we don't adjust to that, many, many destinations are going to take our customers away. And as we talked about that wheel, it starts with the visitor that then lives in that community, that then invests in that community. Let's make it to their values equal to the values that we should have. And how do you argue against environmental sustainability?
Yeah. Appreciate the shout out to the Community Vitality Wheel. We talked about that in the last episode. So I want to get to the final question. Really, this is to both of you, and it's to the core of the advocacy committee. So both of you heard in your bios, neither one of you is destination marketers by trade, but yet here we are. A lot of the advocacy committee, a lot of in our space are, you know, many of us know the joke, right? We didn't go to school for this. We didn't know this was a career path. We're here where we love it. A lot of us are lifers in this. I'm assuming present room and company included as part of that. But I wanted to ask for both of you, you know, since you've now served on the committee for a number of years, what have been sort of your biggest takeaways of learning from your peers in this setting? So Gary was going to go to you first. And Kurt, since you were outgoing chair, I'll let you get the final word on this. But Gary, all right, your thoughts.
Awesome. Thank you. No, you know, it's hard to summarize everything that we've discussed, right, throughout the year and, you know, and beyond that, you know, when I first joined the advocacy committee. But I think for me, one, I definitely appreciate the time and the attention from my colleagues, right, to allow me to either share great information or vent some not pleasant information, right? And so in doing that, I also have the opportunity to learn from my colleagues, not just across the country, but across the globe, of either similar situations or best practices, right? And as I mentioned earlier, I think our committee is a great cross-section of the industry, DMOs, both large and small, and anywhere in between, as well as some folks who work, maybe not at a DMO, but on the periphery or support the DMO. And, you know, for me specifically, the biggest takeaway was artificial intelligence. I got to say, you know, when Andreas, when you brought it to the committee, you know, I was, you know, 100% against artificial intelligence, right? You know, it's bad, it's not people, it's this, it's taking jobs. But then in researching, you know, I found out the great benefits of AI, right? And how could it help me at my job, and how can it help us market our destination better? And so to give you a tangible answer, I would say artificial intelligence is the biggest takeaway. And then secondly is just, you know, being able to share best practices with my colleagues, and definitely, you know, under the leadership of Kurt. So Kurt, thank you so much for chairing this committee with me for the past couple of years. And I look forward to continue working with you as we move forward.
So Kurt, I said you get a final word on this as both outgoing co-chair and reformed hotelier. You'll tell us many times. I want your perspective of the question.
Excellent. Thank you. And Gary, thank you for taking over, because now I can become what the best job in the world, and that's immediate past co-chair. So I can still be involved.
Yeah, but
I totally agree with you that AI, it was one of the most powerful conversations, because I don't think many of us really had taken the time to dive into the topic, and which is absolutely wrong, because it's moving so quickly that you're going to be playing catch up forever. And not that I'm an expert at all, but oh my goodness, what a tool it is and could be. you know, and that could be all the advancement of digital tools, augmented reality. How do we put that into our promotional material? How do we anticipate what our future guests are going to want and need? I thought that was a great topic. But I think one of the ones that, and Gary, I think you're going to support me on this one, that I really enjoyed was the organizational and personal well-being.
Yep. Yep.
All of us work way too many hours, work really hard, study it, try to deliver it, try to become the next thinker, but we neglect ourselves sometimes and possibly our organization because we're so focused and so driven and trying to become the best at whatever we do without reflecting on the consequences of what it does to us or to our families or to our friends around the country. The takeaways, you know, there are many. Having been on this committee, I think for 4 years now, and if Andreas allows me, I'll be on it until he kicks me off. I don't want to be on any other committees, but I thank, you know, Gary, I thank you for partnering through this year with me. Andreas, you've been terrific putting this all together and going from just the individual meetings to then the co-chairs trying to write up what their thoughts were during the year on a quarterly basis to now a podcast. Great movement. I mean, the organization is definitely moving in the right direction. So congratulations to DI and the growth that they've had in a short period of time. Bravo. Bravo.
Thank you. I'm going to end this though by saying thank you both, Kurt and Gary, for your not only responses today, but just your entire leadership and presence throughout not only this year and previous years with the committee. I also want to take again, as I said in the beginning, to dedicate this episode to the 2023 Advocacy Committee, including my staff as well, who has a participatory part of it with helping get the notes out and whatnot. It is hugely beneficial of hearing all of you, your leadership, your thoughts, and helping guide a lot of the Advocacy episode for Destiny International. But again, wanted to dedicate it to them. And again, thank you and Kurt and Gary as well for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A pleasure.
So with that, thank you again for joining myself, Andreas Weisenborn, Kurt Kraus, and Gary Sanchez on this month's episode of The Architects of Destination Advocacy. Please make sure to subscribe within your podcast listening service to always catch the latest episode. To learn more about the work we do, please make sure to subscribe to our newsletter at destinationsinternational.org or checking out our content throughout the advocacy section on the website or speaking at one of our upcoming events. Thank you, and we'll talk soon.